I'll give you $100 for all of it.
$100? These here necklaces is worth a lot more than $100. Why, there's 20 of them here, and I've seen just one of them bring $20 in Denver.
Well, you aren't in Denver. Of course, if you don't like my offer, you can always take him to Denver to sell.
Take the money, Billy. It's better than nothing. Right now, nothing's what we have.
All right, all right. We'll take the $100. But it ain't right, and you know it. It ain't no way right.
If it isn't right from you, consider the Indian you bought these from. I don't know what you paid for them, but I'd be willing to bet you didn't pay no $100.
You got that right.
Give us our money so we can get on about our business.
The jeweler counted out 5 $20 gold pieces. Meacham kept 2 for himself, then gave 1 to each of the other 3 men.
How come you get to keep 2?
Meacham held the piece up.
This here's for all of us. We go over to the saloon, get us something to eat and something to drink, have some leftovers for some whores, and we'll still have $20 apiece in our pockets.
Yeah, yeah, that sounds good to me.
The 4 men tied off their horses, then went into the Last Chance Saloon. The barkeep was at the other end of the bar talking to a couple of his patrons. Then, with the smile on his face, he moved down the bar toward Meacham, Philbin, Oliver, and Cantrell.
What can I get you, gents?
Whiskey. Leave the bottle.
What kind?
I don't care what kind. We want to get drunk, not give a party.
The bartender took a bottle from beneath the counter. There was no label on the bottle, and the color was dingy and cloudy. He put 4 glasses alongside the bottle, then pulled the cork for them.
That'll be $1.50.
Meacham slid the Double Eagle gold piece toward him, then waited for the change. Philbin poured 4 glasses, then passed them around.
What the hell is this? This tastes like horse piss.
It's all in the way you drink it. This here sipping whiskey. Can't be drunk down real fast. What you gotta do is, you gotta sort of sip it.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it ain't all that bad.
They were on their 2nd glass each, and the bottle was more than half empty, when another patron stepped into the saloon. He stood just inside the swinging batwing doors for a moment, taking everything in with 1 comprehensive sweep of his eyes.
Whoa, get a load of that little dandy over there to just come into the saloon. Ain't he something now? I bet that feller wouldn't dress out more than 75 to 85 pounds. 90 pounds at the most.
I'd be careful making them comments about the little feller if and I was you.
Why, what's he gonna do, come over here and beat me up?
No, but he might put a hole between your eyes.
What do you mean he might put a bullet between my eyes? What the hell are you talking about?
We're over here!
The hell are you inviting him over here for?
Man, I want you to meet Pogue Willis.
Willis? This is Pogue Willis?
What do you say we find us a table at the back so we can talk? Get another glass and bring the bottle.
Meacham grabbed the bottle and another glass, and they all went to a table at the back of the room.
I told the boys you had a job for us.
Only he didn't tell us what it was.
Does it matter?
Don't matter as long as it pays off. I just don't want no more bank jobs like the last one.
I told you I sent word calling that job off. Ain't my fault if you got greedy and went before you were supposed to.
Yeah, well, that one is behind us. There's no use palavering over it now. Now, what is this new job, and what do you want us to do?
The bank of...
Whatever bank this is, I hope you checked out the safe so there's nothing like what happened before.
You boys gonna let me tell you what this job is about, or are you gonna sit there and prattle on like a bunch of women?
I'm sorry. I was just making a comment, is all. Given what happened to us the last time we tried to hold up a bank.
I am not in the mood to listen to any comments any of you might be wanting to make. Like I was about to say, the Bank of Phoenix gets a transfer of funds from a bank in Colorado every Friday.
What's a transfer of funds?
Means the bank in Colorado is sending a lot of money down to the bank here in Phoenix by train.
Son of a bitch, you're talking about robbing the train, aren't you?
No, we're going to rob a stagecoach. It's a lot easier than holding up a train.
But I thought you said the money was coming by train from Colorado.
Yeah, I did. The only thing is, the train don't run all the way to Phoenix. Closest it comes is Maricopa. Then they put it on a stagecoach.
How much money we talking about?
From what I hear, they don't never transfer less than $10,000. Is that enough money to get you interested?
Yeah, I think $10,000 is enough to get me interested.
Well, how are we gonna pull this off?
Don't be worrying about none of that. I got it all figured out.
Del Shea stood before Baker in his small office on the reservation.
Del Shea, I know the impulse will be very strong for you to get revenge. But don't. Leave it up to the law.
White man's law.
The law is the law. Just because it was Indians they killed, it doesn't make them any less guilty of murder. The law will find them, and the law will punish them.
How will the law find them? Nobody knows who did it.
Just leave it in the hands of the law. That's all I'm asking of you.
Del Shea nodded, but said nothing else. And at midnight on that very night, in the flickering light of a held torch, he spoke to the nine men he had managed to recruit. One of the recruits was Chandasi. The others were young men without families who would be coming along for the excitement and adventure.
If you are brave of heart and can leave home without so much as saying goodbye to your mother and father, then you have the fighting spirit that you will need in the days to come.
Del Shea looked into the firelit faces of the young men who were eager to become warriors.
Come, we will strike fear into the heart of every white man, and all will hear the name Apache and cower.
All will hear the name Del Shea and cower.
Go to your horses. We ride.
San Carlos was made up of several small encampments that were scattered around the reservation. The wickiups were of traditional construction, animal skins, bark, woven grass, and mud. But at the center of the reservation, where the headquarters was established, stood the Indian agent's house. The equal to any fine home in any city, the agent's residence was a large two-story house with leaded windows, dormers, clapboard sides, and a green-shaped roof. There was a swing on the deep front porch where Baker and his family often sat in the evenings, enjoying the cooling breeze. Centurio rode up to the front of the house, dismounted, and hurried up the brick walk.
Agent Baker! Agent Baker!
What is it, Centurio? What do you mean by banging on my door at this time of morning?
It's Del Shea, Agent Baker. Del Shea, Chandasi, and eight others.
Oh, Del Shea, Chandasi, and eight others. Well, what about them, Centurio? Makes sense, for God's sakes.
They are gone, Agent Baker. All of them.
Gone? By gone, do you mean they've left the reservation?
Yes. Del Shea and Chandasi gathered several warriors to follow them, and they left the reservation.
Damn. Well, it wasn't Chandasi. He didn't have anything to do with it.
You are wrong, Agent Baker. Chandasi is with Del Shea.
Oh, well, Chandasi might be with him all right, but you can bet your bottom dollar that Del Shea is in charge. Chandasi isn't nothing but a puppy that'll go along with anything Del Shea says. How long have they been gone?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I did not see them leave.
All right, never mind. Round up the rest of the Indian police and see if you can find them.
If they are off the reservation, we will have no authority over them.
I know that. That means you had better catch them before they get off reservation property.
I think it may be too late for that.
Yeah, well, whether it's too late or not, you're going after them. And when you find them, you bring them back bound and gagged. I want the others to see their hero humiliated.
I will do so.
At the very moment Centurio and Agent Baker were discussing their absence, Del Shea, Chandasi, and the others were already off the reservation. Eerily illuminated by the flickering torches many of them were carrying, they sat on their horses on the crest of a hill that overlooked the Dugan Ranch near the little white settlement of Picket Post. Del Shea looked down on the little collection of neat buildings that made up the ranch.
All are asleep.
Yes.
Del Shea, we are at war?
Yes.
We will join Goyathle?
No. We will make our own war.
He made a motion with his arm, then pointed toward the barn. Del Shea's riders rode quickly down the hill to the Dugan Ranch. Without any further directions, a couple of the riders broke away from the rest of the pack and headed toward the barn. One of them tossed a torch inside the barn where it landed on dry hay. The other threw his torch up onto the dry, shake shingles of the roof. Within moments, the barn was on fire. Another of the riders started toward the main house, but Del Shea called out to him.
Wait!
The rider stopped, though it was clear by the expression on his face that he did not understand why Del Shea had stopped him. They waited for nearly 2 minutes. Del Shay and the nine other warriors sat silently as they stared at the house, which, though not on fire, cast back the reflected flames of a burning barn. The 10 Indians waited, their faces glowing orange-red from the fire, the illusion creating an apparition of Satan's mounted demons. Suddenly, Dugan and his two sons dashed out through the front door in their nightshirts, not bothering to take time to get dressed. They tumbled off the front porch, then were brought to an immediate stop by the sight of the 10 mounted Indians. Backlit by the burning barn, the Indians looked as if they were ghost riders from hell.
Kill them! Chandesi, find the whore wife of this white man's scum and kill her!
Chandesi nodded grimly and made his way into the house. Jay Peerless Bixby's insufferable manners had continued throughout most of the trip. He grumbled constantly, complaining about everything from the frequency of the stops to the weather to the food that was being served in the dining car.
Yes, well, I will have the braised sirloin tips in hopes that the chef can render it edible.
As the trip progressed, Matt saw that Bixby's boorish behavior wasn't limited to the crew. He treated his wife and business manager with equal disdain. Once, when Cynthia asked Matt a question about ranching, Bixby interrupted her.
Cynthia, please don't try to discuss business. It only exposes your total lack of knowledge.
I'm just trying to take an interest, Jay. If we are going to have a ranch out here, then I want to be of some value to you.
Your value to me, and your only value, is in your looks. Having a beautiful wife is an asset to a successful businessman. Though, I must tell you, my dear, that the moment you open your mouth to show your ignorance, that asset is nullified.
Matt watched Cynthia's reaction to the hateful words, amazed that Bixby either didn't see how his words hurt her or didn't care. On the other hand, Handel seemed acutely aware of the way Bixby treated Cynthia, and though he didn't say anything, he did get up and walk to the back of the car, then out onto the rear vestibule. Matt waited for a moment, then walked out to the rear platform as well. Handel was leaning against the railing, watching the track unwind beneath and behind as the train moved at a 20-mile-per-hour pace.
Mind if I join you?
Not at all, sir. Not at all.
I don't want to step on any toes here, but your Mr. Bixby seems to be a difficult man to please.
You've noticed that, have you?
I think everyone on the train has noticed it.
Yes, well, Mr. Bixby can be difficult.
You seem to handle it well.
I've had years of practice. It's funny. Mr. Bixby has been complaining about the fact that the country out here is so desolate. But I find it awe-inspiring.
First time out here?
Yes, it is. As a matter of fact, this is my first time out of the city of New York. You seem to be a man who is well in control of things. Manifestation of what one thinks of when one thinks of a Westerner. You live out here?
Yes.
Where?
Oh, that's hard to say. I've been just about everywhere out here, from the Canadian border all the way down to the Mexican border.
What is your occupation, if I may ask? I mean, what sort of job would afford a man so much opportunity for travel?
I've done a bit of everything, I reckon. I've been a deputy sheriff, deputy city marshal, and a deputy U.S. marshal. I've scouted for the Army, been a railroad detective, I've been a cowboy, trapped fur, even done some mining for gold and silver.
Ah, what an exciting life you must lead. You truly are the stuff of legend, the kind of man that books are written about. I must say that I not only admire you for living such an exciting life, but also for living it in such a magnificent environment.
If you think this is magnificent, you haven't seen anything yet. Wait until we reach the Rockies in Colorado.
I am looking forward to that. It almost makes it...
Almost makes it worth working for a man like Jay Peerless Bixby?
I didn't say that.
No, you didn't. Because you're too good a man, Mr. Handel. It doesn't take a strong sense of observation to see that. But I don't work for Mr. J. Peerless Bixby. And I have no such restraints. I don't know that I've ever seen a more insufferable man or a more long-suffering woman. I don't know why she puts up with it.
She puts up with it because she feels a sense of obligation.
A sense of obligation to who?
No who, so much as what. She feels a sense of obligation to honor. You see, this marriage was arranged by her father. It was his last wish, or, one might say, his last command to her before he died. I wasn't able to talk him out of it, so the least I can do is...
I'll be damned. That's it, isn't it? The only reason you work for Bixby is so you can look out for Cynthia.
I don't know that I would put it quite that way, but I do look out for her as best I can.
The door to the car opened and Bixby stepped outside.
What are you two doing out here?
We just stepped out for a breath of air.
It stinks of smoke and ash out here. Anyway, they're about to call the first setting for dinner. I would like to eat early, then have the porter turn my bed down. I have discovered that the more I can sleep on this accursed trip, the better it is.
Yes, I have discovered that as well.
The Western Flyer arrived in Denver at 10 o'clock in the morning. There, it was necessary for Matt to collect his luggage and leave the Union Pacific Depot. Boarding an omnibus that was drawn up outside the depot, he rode across town to the depot of the Denver and Rio Grande. There, he learned that the train for El Paso would not leave until 2 that afternoon. Resolving himself to a 4-hour wait at the depot, Matt decided to use the opportunity to get a haircut and take a bath. Coming out of the bathhouse a while later, he looked like a different man. Gone was the suit he had been wearing, to be replaced by jeans, a gray denim shirt, and a Stetson hat. He also strapped on his pistol, feeling comfortable in reacquiring that which he had abandoned during his trip to St. Louis. Much more refreshed now, Matt had his lunch, then bought a newspaper and settled down to read.
El Paso? But isn't that in Texas?
Looking up, he saw Bixby standing at the ticket counter arguing with the clerk. Matt shook his head. Earlier in the day, when Matt had stepped off the Union Pacific train in Denver, he considered waiting to take a later train down to El Paso, just so he would not have to put up with Bixby any longer. But he found that he actually liked Hendel, and he believed that somehow his being present helped Hendel bear the burden of being Bixby's employee. Although he had not known Hendel all that long, he felt that leaving now would be the same as, well, deserting a friend. So he decided to continue his trip as planned.
Mr. Jensen?
Bixby and the others came over to join him in the waiting room.
Mr. Jensen, I didn't see you at the cab stand, so I thought perhaps you might be on a different train. I'm glad to see that we shall be continuing our journey together. You have adopted a different mode of dress, I see.
No, this is my normal mode of dress. I adopted a different mode of dress when I went to St. Louis.
Well, I think it becomes you.
Well, thank you, ma'am.
Oh, my. I see that you are wearing a pistol. Is the West really so unsettled that one must wear a pistol?
It's sort of a habit I've gotten into. You might be more comfortable, by the way, if you would take off your jacket and vest. For the rest of the journey, it's only going to get hotter.
Thank you, but I've no intention of taking fashion suggestions from someone whose idea of proper dress includes wearing a pistol on his hip.
Like you said, Mr. Bixby, just a suggestion.
Have you eaten, Mr. Jensen? We are about to take our lunch. Would you care to eat with us?
Thank you. I've had my lunch.
Very well. Come, Hendel. Let's find the dining room.
I've eaten as well.
You have? And when did that happen?
While I was seeing to our luggage.
Very well. You can wait here. Come, Cynthia.
May I join you?
Yes, of course.
To be honest, Mr. Jensen, I wasn't sure you would be on this train.
I considered waiting for the next one.
Why didn't you?
I need to get there and get my business done.
Well, for whatever reason, I'm glad you're still with us. Confess that I have enjoyed our conversations during the journey, and it has helped pass the time in an enjoyable way. I just wish it could help Cynthia as well.
I think your being here helps her.
I hope it does.
The sun was a great orange ball poised on the eastern horizon. Del Shea and the others waited just over the crest of a ridge that overlooked the house. Despite its overstated name, Rancho Grande was barely a ranch, with no more than 15 head of cattle. Del Shea could smell the aroma of cooking bacon and baking biscuits, and he felt his stomach rumble in hunger. The back door of the little house opened, and a man came outside wearing a pair of trousers with suspenders. As he walked toward the outhouse, he loosened his suspenders and let them drape down to either side. The arrow did not drop him, and he spun around with a surprised and pained expression on his face, reaching around, trying to grab the arrow, trying to pull it out. Looking up, he saw Del Shea and the other Apaches standing no more than 50 yards away.
Martha! Indians!
Del Shea ran toward the house with the others close behind. Del Shea leaped over the body of the rancher, then ran up the steps and burst through the kitchen door. He stopped in surprise at what he saw. There, lying on the floor, was a boy who looked to be about 6 or 7. His eyes were open but unseeing. There was a hole in his forehead from which a small trickle of blood oozed. A woman was sitting on the floor next to the boy. Her eyes were wide in fright, and she was holding a pistol to her temple.
Woman, why did you kill the boy?
She killed herself and her child.
Yes.
But I don't understand. Why did she do that?
It is what white women are told to do.
Pogue Willis was sitting on a rock eating cold beans from a can. Bert Philbin had climbed up onto the ledge a little earlier and was looking toward the south. Dearmont Cantrell and Billy Meacham were playing a game of mumble-tick-peg, and Abe Oliver had walked over into a little patch of woods to relieve himself.
Hey, Pogue, I can see the dust. That stage is a-coming.
Come on down, Philbin. Meacham, Cantrell, Oliver, you three get over here.
Meacham, Cantrell, and Oliver came over to join Willis as Philbin came down from the ridge.
Now, do all you have it straight as to what each of you is going to do?
Yeah. We pull a log across the road to stop the stage. When it stops, you and Meacham will be up here on the rock keeping an eye open while I brace the driver and shotgun guard, and Oliver and Cantrell pull all the folks out of the coach. And we'll take whatever money they got plus the money pouch.
Right. Any questions?
Yeah, I got a question. You ain't never said how much money you think there is this here coach will be carrying.
Who knows how much it's carrying? That ain't nothing you can ever tell till you open the money pouch and look. Now, enough talking. Get the log across the road. Everyone get ready.
There were six passengers in the coach. Bixby, Cynthia, Hendel, Matt, a whiskey drummer, and a young man who was returning to school at Tempe Normal. Matt was napping. Oh!
What is it?
A masked man's head suddenly appeared in the window. He stuck a gun inside.
Everyone out of the coach!
Everyone quickly filed out of the coach.
See here! What is this? Do you know who I am?
You're the man I'm robbing.
Jay!
Anybody else?
Another gunman came around to join the first. He was also wearing a mask.
Bibbin's dead. The shotgun guard killed him. We get the money pouch, and we'll clean these folks out first. Folks, what I want you to do is pretend you're all in church and the plate is being passed. I want you to put all your money and your valuables in this here hat. If you try to hold out on me, I'll shoot you. Now we'll start with you, mister.
Those streaks of blood were sliding down from the wound on top of Bixby's head. He had managed to stay on his feet. Bixby took out his wallet and put it in the hat.
Your pocket watch, too.
Bixby disconnected his watch from his vest and dropped that in the hat as well. Glancing up, Matt saw two other masked men standing up there, looking down at the proceedings.
That bauble you're wearing around your neck looks pretty nice there, missy. But it's going to look even prettier in my hat.
When he got to Hendel, Hendel dropped in his own wallet and watch without complaint.
You folks are doing just real fine.
The robber stopped in front of Matt, but Matt had nothing in his hand.
Now, how come you were standing here empty-handed? And what do you got to give me?
Just a bullet in the stomach if you don't give these folks their money back and ride away from here.
Hey, Oliver! You hear what this feller just said?
Just shoot him and be done with it.
Yep, I reckon that's best.
With the speed of an avenging angel, Matt drew both his pistols. Looking up to where the other two men were standing, Matt raised his pistol, but both dropped down out of sight on the other side of the rock. Matt climbed the rock and looked for them, but by the time he reached the top of the rock, they were already too far away for a good shot. Putting his gun away, Matt climbed back down to the stage. Bixby, Cynthia, Hendel, and the other two passengers were gathered around the bodies of the two men he had shot. The body of the robber the guard had shot was lying on the road in front of the coach. The guard was also dead, slumped over the edge of the seat with his arm hanging down. His shotgun was lying on the ground alongside the left front wheel, the stock of the gun red with his blood. The driver was also slumped forward.
How bad are you hit?
Well, I don't rightly know. All I know is it hurts like hell.
The driver was holding his hand over his side. Matt moved the driver's hand to one side.
It looks like it cut a pretty good crease, but it didn't poke a hole in you.
Matt looked at the seat just behind the driver and saw a bullet buried in the front of the coach.
And it didn't stay in you.
Damn! That's the closest I ever want to come to getting shot dead.
The robbers are gone. You feel up to driving?
Yeah, I reckon so.
We need to get you patched up first.
You know something about doctoring, do you?
I've patched a few bullet holes in my day. couple of them on myself. Wonder if you're carrying anything we can use as a bandage.
Cynthia, who was tending to the wound on Bixby's head, looked up toward Matt when she heard him say he needed something for a bandage.
I can give you something to use as a bandage.
What have you got that you could possibly give him?
Just watch.
Reaching up under the hem of her skirt, she began to wiggle around a bit.
Cynthia, stop that! You're disgracing yourself!
After a few more moments of wriggling, she pulled a large piece of silk from under her skirt.
How about this? A silk petticoat.
Cynthia, have you lost your mind?
Oh, don't be silly, Jay. I have two more on.
Up on the driver's seat, Matt unbuttoned Moses' shirt, then pulled it away from him. Some of the coagulating blood had caused the shirt to stick to the wound.
I know that probably stung a bit, but the truth is, sticking to your wound like that is probably what saved your life. It acted like a bandage, and it stopped the bleeding. If it hadn't, you might have bled to death.
As Matt worked to apply a bandage to the stagecoach driver, the drummer and the young student pulled the masks off the dead robbers.
Wait a minute. I know these men.
You know them?
Sort of. I don't actually know them by name, but I've seen them before.
I would imagine they were up to no good then as well.
You're right about that.
What are we going to do with them now?
Well, if you two men will give me a hand, we'll lift them up onto the roof of the coach. I hate to lay the shotgun guard out there with the others, but you don't have much of a choice.
You can put the shotgun guard inside the coach with us.
What? How dare you make such a suggestion? Anyway, there's no room for him inside.
There will be. I intend to finish the trip by riding up here with the driver.
You will not put that dead man in the coach with us. I will not allow it.
You won't allow it? Mister, I'll have you know that as the driver of this coach, I am in charge. Me, not you. Now either Pinky rides in there with you, or you can ride up on top of the coach with the dead outlaws, or you can walk. It's up to you.
Your employer will hear from me, my good man. You can count on that.
Oh, Jay, for heaven's sake, be quiet, will you?
Cynthia was cleaning his wound, and she pressed down hard on the bump.
Ouch! What are you trying to do, kill me?
Don't give her any ideas, mister.
Well, I'll be...
In about half an hour, the coach was rolling along again.
Can you believe that? Mr. Jensen had just killed two men. Two men, mind you. Yet, to look at him and hear him talk, you would think nothing had happened. To think that we had befriended him.
Surely you aren't condemning him, are you, Jay?
I am indeed.
But why? He saved our money, if not our lives.
He is as savage as the others.
I think he was courageous, even heroic.
Of course you would think such a thing, my dear. As empty as your head is, you probably see him as a knight in shining armor. But I'm telling you now that someone who can kill as easily as he can is not someone with whom we need to associate, and I forbid you to speak to him again.
But, Jay...
Not another word! When we get to Phoenix, we shall go our way, and no doubt he shall go his.
It isn't as if I want to invite him over for tea, but I do think that you are wrong in your judgment of him. I think we are obligated to him for our very safety.
After leaving the aborted stagecoach robbery, Pogue Willis and Billy Meacham rode hard, dismounting occasionally to give the horses a blow. Even then, they didn't stop, but continued to walk, always putting distance behind them. They did pause briefly late in the afternoon in order to eat a few bites of jerky and to take a few swallows of water.
Here we are, drinking water that tastes like horse piss and chewing on jerky that tastes like saddle leather. You said we was all gonna get rich. Well, the only thing we got was my cousin killed, two of my pards dead, and for all that, we got nothing.
Quit your bitching. You got out alive, didn't you?
Yeah, I'm alive. As long as I don't starve to death or die of thirst. There's gotta be a town near here. Listen, Poe, don't you think there's a town around here somewhere?
What if there is?
Well, if there is, I was thinking we'd go in and get something fit and eat and decent to drink.
You was thinking, was you? What makes you believe you have enough brains to think?
You got no right to talk to me like that.
Anytime you want to call me on it, why, feel free to try.
No, you ain't going to goad me into pulling a gun against you, no matter how hard you try. Maybe I ain't the smartest man around, but I got more sense than to do anything like that.
Then try to have enough sense to keep your mouth shut for a while. Oh, I'm getting just real tired of listening to you. We're going to Phoenix. I figure if we didn't get the money while it was on the coach, then we'll take it from the bank.
If we couldn't get it from the coach, what makes you think we could get it from a bank?
Stagecoaches are moving, banks are still. Get mounted. We have a long way to go yet.
It was late afternoon by the time the coach reached Phoenix. After he climbed down from the coach, Matt walked over and stood against the wall of the stage depot, watching as some men pulled the three outlaws off the top of the coach and laid them out on the wooden platform. The moment the bodies were laid out, several people went over to look down at them. The crowd grew quickly as more and more people, not only employees of the stage depot, but citizens from the city, began congregating to look at the morbid show. Fortunately, the shotgun guard was spared that indignity, as they decided to keep his body inside the coach until the undertaker could call for him. The sheriff, having been notified of the attempted stagecoach robbery, hurried down to the depot. He looked down at the three bodies, then, after speaking to the driver for a few minutes, walked over to talk to Matt.
His name is Williams, Robert Williams. I'm the sheriff here. I understand from the driver that you are the one who killed these three men.
I killed two of them. The guard got the other one.
And who might you be, if you don't mind my asking?
My name is Jensen. Matt Jensen.
Matt Jensen? Are you the Matt Jensen?
Well, I don't know if I'm the Matt Jensen, but I'm the only one I know.
Of course you were the Matt Jensen. Nobody else could have done this. You know who you killed there, Mr. Jensen?
Yeah, I know who they are. I can't call them by name, but I know who they are. I ran into them a few months back, but it was up in Colorado.
That sounds about right. I heard they were up in Colorado for a while. I don't think they've been back down here for more than a couple of weeks.
You know who they are?
Oh, yeah, I know them all right. The one on the left went by the name of Bert Philbin. The big one is Dearmont Cantrell. And the other one is Abe Oliver. How did you happen to run into them in Colorado, if you don't mind my asking?
Matt told the sheriff about his encounter with them at Ian Crocker's ranch.
I didn't know it at the time, but it turns out they had tried to hold up a bank up in Bent Canyon. There's another man running with him by the name of Percy Morris. The only reason I know his name is because I killed him in the shootout.
Don't know anything about a fellow named Morris. They must have run into him when they was up in Colorado. You say there was another fellow with these three?
Actually, there were two more with him. But they were both wearing masks, and I didn't get a good look at them.
Well, these boys also ran with an hombre by the name of Billy Meacham. Fact is, he was sort of the head of this little group. And I'll bet a dollar to a donut that he was one of the two that got away. Of course, without someone actually seeing Meacham there, I don't reckon I can rightly accuse him just yet. As to who the other one was, though, I don't have the slightest idea. Mr. Jensen, you are aware, are you not, that there is a bounty on these three men?
A bounty? Well, I can't say that I'm surprised, but no, I didn't know anything about a bounty. I'm not a bounty hunter, Sheriff, so I don't keep up with such things.
Well, we're talking $1,500 here. $500 on each of them. I don't reckon you'll be turning that money down, will you?
No, Sheriff, I won't be turning the money down. I understand from the driver that the guard was married.
Pinky was married, that's true.
Give $1,000 of the reward to his widow.
I can see her getting $500. I mean, seeing as how Pinky got one of them. But you don't need to give her $1,000.
I know I don't need to. I want to.
All right. I reckon you're as good a man as they say you are, Matt Jensen. By the way, I'm pretty sure these men you killed this morning are the same sons of bitches that got all our Indian problems started in the first place.
By Indian problems, you're talking about Del Shea, not Geronimo, right?
That's right. You know Del Shea? I didn't think anyone outside of the Arizona Territory had ever even heard of that son of a bitch.
The reason I know about him is because I scouted for General Crook for a while. I never exactly met Del Shea, but I have seen him. I know Del Shea rode with Geronimo. I didn't know he had gone out on his own, though, until I read in the newspaper about one of his raids.
You're right. He did ride with Geronimo for a while, but then, for some reason, he decided to come back to the reservation. I think if it hadn't been for Meacham and these galoots here, Del Shea would still be living just real peaceable-like out there.
What makes you think these men had anything to do with Del Shea leaving the reservation?
It's just something Gene Baker told me, and I just put it together. Baker is the Indian agent out in San Carlos. It seems that Del Shea and his cousin Chandisi were going into the town of Picket Post to do some honest trading. They left their squaws and their children waiting for them on the blankets just outside of town. The squaws were watching over the trading trinkets. You know, silver and turquoise necklaces and the like. But when Del Shea and Chandisi came back, their squaws and their children was dead, and their trading goods was gone. Baker says he thinks that's what sent Del Shea and Chandisi and the others they was able to recruit out on the trail. Anyway, a few weeks ago, right after that happened, Meacham and these three galoots showed up in Phoenix, looking to trade silver and turquoise Indian jewelry. It ain't that far a stretch to figure that these is the same ones that killed the Indian squaws.
If there was a bounty on them, why didn't you arrest them as soon as they came to town?
I wasn't in town when they came in. I was down in Maricopa. By the time I come back up to Phoenix, all four of them boys was long gone. Tell you what, Mr. Jensen, You do have my thanks and the thanks of the town. You stopped a stagecoach robbery, and from what some are saying, you may have even saved a few of the passengers' lives as well.
Too bad I wasn't able to do anything for the shotgun guard.
Yeah, Pinky was a good man. I'm sorry for his widow, but at least I know that Moses and his wife and kids are grateful that you come along when you did, and that you treated him.
The driver's wound isn't all that serious. He should come through just fine.
I'll tell you what I hope. I hope that once word gets back to Del Shea that the sons of bitches who killed his family have been killed, they'll come back to the reservation. That's never gonna happen. Del Shea is gonna hold every white man responsible for what happened to his family. Same as white folks are gonna hold all the Apaches responsible for what Geronimo and now Del Shea have done.
Can you recommend a good hotel, Sheriff?
Well, you might try the Phoenix House. Though we do have a couple of pretty good ones, and I wouldn't want to be accused of trying to steer you to one certain place.
Phoenix House sounds good to me. Where is it?
It is right at the end of this same street. Can't miss it.
Thanks.
Oh, and if you don't mind my asking, Mr. Jensen, I'm just curious. What brings a man like you to Phoenix?
I'm searching for someone.
Searching for someone? Thought you said you weren't a bounty hunter.
No, it's not that kind of search. This is personal. The man I'm looking for is the brother of a friend. I understand he came here recently.
What's this fella's name? The one you're looking for?
His name is Marcus. Andrew Marcus.
You don't say. Well, I'll be damned. Andy Marcus. Yeah, I know him.
Let me make sure this is the right one. The Andy Marcus I'm looking for is a brewer.
Oh, yes, sir. That's the one, all right. Mr. Marcus hadn't been in town for very long, but the fact is, just about everybody in Phoenix knows him. That's because he's building a brewery, and there isn't anyone out here who wouldn't like to see us get a brewery. Only problem is, I don't know if Andy's going to be able to pull it off or not.
Why not? I was given to believe that he's a master brewer. Those men know their stuff.
No, it's neither his skills nor his work habits I'm concerned about. But Andy Marcus is as dedicated a worker as anyone you'd ever want to meet. But I ain't all that sure he's going to be able to raise the money.
How much does he need?
I don't know exactly how much he needs, but it's more than he has, I know that. That don't seem to stop him, though. He ain't one to give up.
Do you have any idea where I can find him?
Sure. You don't have far to go at all. He plans to set up his brewery in that building right over there across the street. Unless I miss my guess, you'll find him there now. And the fact that he didn't come over here to see the bodies of the outlaws when the whole rest of the town did ought to give you an idea of how dedicated he is to his work.
Yes, it does. And thanks for the information.
Glad to be able to provide it. And if you'll come down to my office tomorrow morning, by then I'll have the authorization to pay you your bounty money.
Thanks. I'll be there.
When Ken Hendel came down into the lobby of the Phoenix House, he saw Cynthia sitting in a chair in the streaming light of the window. She was reading Sonnets of the Portuguese, a book he had bought for her to keep her entertained on the long train journey.
Ah, Mrs. Bixby, reading the book, I see. I hope you are enjoying it.
Enjoying it? Oh, Mr. Hendel, I simply love it. How wonderful of you to buy it for me.
I saw it, and I thought you might like it.
But you must let me pay you for it.
No, I could never do that. I bought this for you because I consider you my friend, and I hope you feel the same way about me.
Oh, indeed, I do. I consider you a very, very dear friend.
I'm glad.
May I read one of the sonnets to you?
Of course.
If thou must love me, let it be for naught except for love's sake only. Do not say, I love her for her smile, her look, her way of speaking gently, for a trick of thought that falls in well with mine, and certes brought a sense of pleasant ease on such a day. For these things in themselves, beloved, may be changed, or changed for thee, and love so wrought may be unwrought so. Neither love me for thine own dear pity's wiping my cheeks dry. A creature might forget to weep who bore thy comfort long and lose thy love thereby. But love me for love's sake, that evermore thou mayst love on through love's eternity.
Cynthia drew the book to her chest, then looked up at Hendel.
Isn't that just the most beautiful thing you have ever heard?
Yes. I must confess that Elizabeth Barrett Browning does have a way with words.
I think reading a poem aloud gives it much more life than merely looking at words lying dormant on the page. But Jay would never let me read anything aloud to him. He says he doesn't have time for such nonsense. Thank you for allowing me to do that, Mr. Hendel, my dear friend.
Then, looking around, Hendel saw Mad Jensen coming into the hotel.
Oh, look, there is Mr. Jensen.
Mr. Jensen! Hello!
Matt set his bag down, then came over to greet Cynthia and Hendel.
Hello. So you've chosen this hotel as well, have you? That tells me the sheriff's suggestion was a good one.
Oh yes, I think you will be very pleased with it. I know that we are.
Really? Even Mr. Bixby is pleased with it?
Oh, how well you know my husband.
Have you found the brother of your friend yet?
I think so. Haven't seen him yet, but the sheriff told me where to find him. And it has to be the same man.
Will you be leaving as soon as you complete your business? If so, please stop by and tell us goodbye before you go.
I'm not planning to leave right away. In fact, I've had my horse sent here.
Oh, how nice. Then we will be seeing each other again.
Yes.
Touching the brim of his hat, Matt smiled at Cynthia and Hendel, then walked over to the desk and signed the register. After Matt checked into the hotel, he went over to the Sundown Corral to check on his horse. Matt was glad to see Spirit was none the worse for wear, and decided to go see if he couldn't find Mr. Marcus. When Matt reached the building the sheriff had pointed out as the one Marcus was using to build his brewery, he saw that the front door was open. Matt stopped at the door, but didn't go inside.
Hello? Hello?
The inside was in shadows, poorly illuminated by the open door, a few open windows, and the bars of sunlight that streamed in through the cracks between the boards. Matt saw someone working on a large vat, and there was enough similarity in appearance to Lee that Matt knew immediately he had found the right man.
Are you Andrew Marcus?
Say, hand me that spanner, would you, mister?
Matt picked up the wrench and handed it to him.
Now, when I turn this, what I want you to do is look underneath this vat and see if it closes off the drain.
All right.
The man began turning the nut, and Matt looked underneath the vat. He saw the drain close.
Well, did that close it down?
Yes.
Oh, good, good. I've been working on that all day. Thanks for your help.
I didn't do a whole lot.
Oh, sure you did. I needed another pair of eyes, and you came along at the right time. You got my name right. I'm Marcus. Who are you, and what can I do for you?
My name is Matt Jensen, Mr. Marcus, and I'm afraid I have some bad news for you.
Bad news? Wait a minute. Are you telling me there's some kind of law that says I can't open a brewery here? Because if there is, it must be a new law. I've read all the laws and all the statutes pertaining to brewing, and I didn't see anything that says I can't do it.
No, it's not about that. It has nothing to do with the brewery. It's about Lee, your brother.
Oh, damn, I knew it. He's in trouble with that mine he bought, isn't he? I told him he was a fool for getting mixed up in something like that.
No, sir, I wish that was the worst of it. The truth is, Mr. Marcus, your brother is dead.
What? Did you say Lee is dead?
Yes, sir. I'm sorry.
How'd he die?
He was killed in a gunfight.
Lee? Killed in a gunfight? Mister, are you sure you're talking about the same man? Lee Marcus might get himself into a fist fight, maybe even a brawl, but he would never get into a gunfight.
I'm sorry, Mr. Marcus. I am talking about your brother. Though I would give anything in the world if it wasn't true.
Andy walked over to sit down on the bottom step of a stairway that led to a platform that stretched out over the three vats.
When did it happen?
Almost a month ago now.
Damn, that means he's already been buried. Here I've been so busy trying to get this brewery started, I didn't even know about it. I didn't even know about it because I was too damn selfish. Hell, I wasn't even there for his funeral.
I went to St. Louis to find you. Lee thought that's where you were.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. I mean, about you going all the trouble and me not even being there. Truth is, Mr. Jensen, Lee didn't know where I was because I didn't write to tell him I'd left St. Louis. You see, I sort of hoped I'd had this brewery going before I had to tell him anything about it. Then I was going to ask him to give up that worthless mine of his and come join me. I wasn't even going to charge him or anything, just take him on as a full partner. Now it's too late for that.
Lee left something for you.
Matt opened his bag and took out an envelope and handed it to Marcus.
What is it?
Opening the envelope, Marcus looked inside, then looked up at Matt.
What the hell? This is money.
Yes, exactly $2,000, in fact.
Although Lee had told Matt to use some of the money to offset his traveling expenses, Matt had not used any of it, preferring to keep the entire $2,000 together.
My God, you're telling me that there's $2,000 here and it came from Lee?
Yes, that is exactly what I'm telling you.
How in the world did Lee ever come up with that much money?
Turns out you were wrong about the mine, Mr. Marcus. The mine paid well for him.
No, be damned. All this time I've been mad at whoever sold it to him, and I wish I could meet that fella now so I could apologize.
Well, Mr. Marcus, you just met him.
Wait a minute, you? You're the one that sold my brother that mine?
I am. Oh, and by the way, the silver mine belongs to you now.
Again, Matt reached into the bag and pulled out a sheet of paper.
I've had all the paperwork drawn up transferring ownership to you.
Mister, I'd like to shake your hand. You may well be the most honest man I've ever met. You could have kept the money and the mine, and I would have never known anything about it. So the mine paid off, huh?
Yes. Lee had to work it, and I won't tease you, it was hard work. But in the end, the mine did pay off for your brother.
Well, now that does present me with something of a quandary. I need to ask myself, should I pull up stakes here and go to Colorado to work the mine? After all, it has proven itself. Or should I stay here and build that brewery? This is all the money I need to finish.
I intend to stay here for a few more days. Let me know what you decide. If you decide to sell out here and go up to Denver, we can go up together.
You know the mine. Do you think I should do it? Leave here and go up there, I mean?
No, sir, Mr. Marcus. It's not my place to tell you. This is a decision you're going to have to make on your own.
Yeah, I guess you're right about that. All right, I'll give it some thought over the next couple days.